Hey y'all, welcome to another episode of Jesse's Fireside Chats. This is going to be the 15th installment of our series, The Grab Bag, and in this episode, I'm going to be talking to you about education, daylight saving time, dogs, believe it or not, and the types of absolutes used in political discourse. So, buckle your seatbelts, let's get started. So, the first thing I'd like to talk about is daylight savings time. So, my thoughts on this are pretty simple. There are 24 hours in a day, no matter what you do to the clock. So for the sake of clarity, we should just leave it as one time zone for the entire year rather than changing it around. I think that daylight savings time probably had a use at one point when Ben Franklin proposed it, because that was back before we had light bulbs and electricity. So they had to use candles and other things that would cost a lot of money to have them going all night. So I can understand that in that kind of environment, you would want to have some way to lessen your usage of candles and other expensive light sources. However, comma, now that we do have light bulbs, smartphones, and other things that run on electricity, daylight savings time no longer has a use. It never had one to begin with, because even if it was proposed by Ben Franklin, it was not implemented until after World War I. And I can't help but notice that light bulbs were invented in the 19th century. World War I happened in the 20th century. We now live in the 21st century. So, this means that daylight savings time was always outdated. And so I think we should just get rid of it. Because, yeah, there are times in the year where the day is shorter. That's the case anyway. You're not going to make the sun set later, or have more daylight in the day, if you change the clock around. If you want to be awake for more of the daylight, I guess, I don't know, wake up earlier. you know, we have thousands, actually probably millions of people in this country who work the night shift, okay? So when people are working the night shift, it's night, it's dark outside. That's the case no matter if it's daylight savings time or not. So I think that basically daylight savings time is stupid. We should get rid of it. It does not do anyone any favors. All it does is create more confusion. And just as a matter of principle, I think it's stupid, and therefore we should get rid of it. Even if I had no other reason, that would be, even that alone would be my reason for wanting to get rid of it. Because, you know, generally if I think something's stupid, even if I don't have another reason beyond that I think it's stupid, I'm going to say we should get rid of it. That's just basic. That's just how I work, I guess. excuse me. But those are basically my thoughts. There's 24 hours in a day. People are already going to have to pay a crap ton of money in the winter for utilities anyhow. Because whether you heat your home with electricity or gas or heating oil or whatever, you're still paying more because you have to heat your home. Some people also pay exorbitantly large utility bills in the summer because they want to keep their home at 60 degrees. So even utility bills are not generally helped a whole lot by daylight savings time. And so now let's move on to the next thing, which is education. So I've already told you I think we should get rid of the Department of Education because I don't think we should rely on the government to educate our kids. But I'm going to go a bit deeper today. I'm going to go a bit deeper into how that applies specifically to education. So if you're a parent, your job at the bare minimum is to make sure your kid has a roof over his head, food in his belly, and water to drink, obviously, clothes on his back, and gets basic education and spiritual instruction. Those are, and medical care. Those are basically the most minimal requirements for being a good parent. Now, obviously, we would like to think that, you know, as a parent, you should also make sure your kid feels loved and has toys to play with and whatnot. Yes, but at the absolute bare minimum, food, shelter, water, education, spiritual instruction, medical care, clothes on his back. So because education is one of the things that you as a parent should make sure your kid gets, then I think it makes perfect sense to say you can no longer just foist that responsibility onto the federal government. Getting rid of the Department of Education would force parents to take a more active role in their kids' education. This is not to say that they don't take any active role. Most parents, worth their salt, make sure their kid does his homework, has decent grades, gets extra help if he needs it, blah, 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 if they can. I mean, I know that some parents, you know, they work a lot, whatever, they can't do as much. But they usually do what they can. Now, I know there's also bad parents out there who don't do that, but we're talking about decent, if not decent to good parents is what I'm mainly talking about here. And, you know, parents who, even if they can't do as much as other parents because they have to work more, or whatever, at least they do what they can. And so, yeah, I think if we get rid of the Department of Education at the federal level, that will force parents to take a more active role in their kids' education because they can no longer foist it onto the federal government. Say, okay, educate my kid. I don't care if you teach him that he can identify as a blue bean stalk, whatever. And we're already seeing this because some states have implemented policies that allow parents to review the curriculum and the lesson plans, and that allow parents to opt their kids out of things that are obviously immoral. Now, we shouldn't have those immoral things to begin with, but at least if parents can opt their kids out of them, that's a start. And so I think if you get rid of the Federal Department of Education, you'll no longer have the funding for those programs like the comprehensive sex ed and all that. So parents, yes, that does mean that there'll be one less thing they have to do and that they won't have to opt their kid out of the program if the school no longer has the program. However, comma, if education is returned to the states, then, you know, most states and local communities will be able to have greater agency in deciding the curriculum that kids receive. And parents who are involved in their local community or who wish to get involved for this reason will have more agency. So even if they are not homeschooling their kids, which homeschooling is good and all, but I'm not saying that all parents have to do that because, you know, again, parents have to work and all that. I'm not diametrically opposed to the existence of public schools. However, comma, aside from homeschooling, if parents have greater say in the curriculum and in, like, in what their kid learns about and does not learn about in school, and what is, say, in the libraries at the schools, then that gives the parents more agency. And so the parents then have a more active role in the kids' education, rather than just saying, okay, government, teach my kid whatever you want. Which again, I'm not saying that that's the way all parents view education now, because it's not, especially with the passage of these programs that allow the parents to review the curriculum and whatnot. But if education is returned to the state and local communities, who's in the local communities? Well, the parents are a big part of that. So that means the parents will have more agency and more a more active role, at least in theory, in deciding what their kid learns about and does not learn about. Also, with school choice, which many states are already passing, that gives parents more say, because even if a parent can't afford the tuition at a Christian school, for example, they can still send their kid to that school because the money follows the student rather than the school. So that also allows parents to take a more active role, because they can choose literally which school their kid goes to. And all I'm going to say about the Harvard story is, yes, more of this. Because you know my thoughts on academia, you know my thoughts on modern universities, you know my thoughts on how universities often do end up indoctrinating people. I personally can attest that it is hard to be a conservative in a university, because my when I was at Ball State, it was awful. I was bullied. I was kicked out of things. It was not great. And that wasn't even Harvard. I'm sure at Harvard it's probably even worse. I would rather drink lava than go to Harvard. So I'm not going to reiterate all my points about academia. I did two whole episodes on the academic racket. You can check them out anytime, wherever you get your podcasts. Now, I'd like to get to the third thing I had, which is apparently liberal outlets, according to a story from Fox News, liberal outlets are talking about dogs being bad for the environment. The article in Fox News specifically mentioned The Guardian and Mother Jones, which are two leftist outlets. And apparently the claim boils down to the idea that dogs somehow interfere with the wildlife and pollute the waterways and increase carbon emissions, blah, 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 blah. I didn't even bother to read the whole article because it's literally ridiculous. I'm sorry. That's not saying that about Fox. That's saying about the claims these outlets are making. It's just so ridiculous that in order to prevent my brain from exploding, I could not read the whole article. And so I'm going to debunk this. So first of all, climate change is a myth. So all this carbon emission talk, you can put a stick in it, because climate change is a myth. I did a whole episode about how climate change is a myth. Again, you can find that wherever you get your podcasts, basically, except for unless you use something called Deezer, which I've never even heard of. but all major podcast directories. Anyhow, yeah, carbon emissions, stop talking about carbon emissions, climate change is a myth. We don't care. And then also the claim that they pollute the waterways. Again, how do dogs pollute the waterways any more than any other creature? That's just ridiculous. The waterways, even if we didn't have dogs, the waterways would be polluted with bacteria. So are you going to get rid of all the bacteria? Because that's going to cause all kinds of problems, even if you could, which is probably physically impossible without killing everything else. And then the idea that the dogs interfere with the wildlife. Okay, even if dogs do attack, like penguins or whatever, or small birds, whatever it may be, the claim that dogs interfere with the wildlife, essentially paves the way for the claim, destroy the environment to save the environment. Because in a quest to be environmentalist, these people are essentially suggesting that that we should destroy the environment to save it from itself or whatever. Because if you take that logic to its extreme and apply it consistently, which is if you were to say that dogs interfere with the wildlife, And then you were to take that claim and apply it to every other or any other animal, you would be suggesting that since everything interferes with the wildlife, since all animals interfere with the wildlife, maybe even all plants, then you'd have to get rid of them. Because if you're saying something interferes with the wildlife, then you're saying that that thing is a problem. You're problematizing it. And so, if you were going to go the next step further and try to suggest a solution, then the solution you would end up with most likely is to kill all the dogs or get rid of them, because they interfere with the wildlife. So then if you were to apply that logic more consistently, if you were to apply it to other things, what you would eventually end up with is everything interferes with the wildlife. So kill everything. So yeah, you would essentially end up with destroy the environment to save the environment. Because, newsflash, I don't remember a lot from biology, but I do remember that food chains exist and food webs are related, but not exactly the same thing. So any animal that is participating in the food chain or the food web is by definition interfering with the wildlife, because technically, if you kill another animal or you eat a plant, you are interfering with the wildlife because you are leaving it in a different state than you found it. And so, there could be an argument made that every animal and every plant interferes with the wildlife by growing or by eating something else or by dying. You know, there is no world in which plants and animals do not interfere with nature or whatever, because nature is always changing. It's not alive. The word Mother Nature makes me want to cringe to death, because who's the mother? I mean, God created nature. God is the father. And so if you were to say that there is a Mother Nature, you would be creating a false god. You'd be creating a second god that is false. Because unless you were suggesting that the Virgin Mary traveled back in time and created nature, which I'm not Catholic, so like I don't, you know, see her as the same way they do, but like that's the closest thing I can think, because Jesus is God, and so Jesus, when he was born on this earth, because he walked this earth as a man, his earthly mother was Virgin Mary. So unless you're suggesting that somehow she traveled back in time and created all of nature, which would then make her into something more than what she is, because she's a human being, you'd be changing her into a different entity that, like, it does not make sense. Like, God is the Father and he created nature. There is no mother here, okay? Anyhow, yeah, if you were to say that dogs, by participating in the food chain or the food web, interfere with wildlife, then you would have to, in order to be logically consistent, you would have to apply that logic to every other animal and every plant, probably, at a certain point. And so then you would end up with every living being in the environment interferes with the wildlife. And so then if you were going to take it the next step further and suggest a solution, you would end up with kill everything. So you would literally be saying destroy the environment, including yourself, in order to save the environment. So I don't know if these people understand the true implications of what they're claiming, but either way, it's scary. There's been a common talking point that liberalism is anti-human, but this claim just seems, again, if you take it to its logically consistent conclusion, this claim is not just anti-human, it's anti-everything. It's pure nihilism is what it is. And so Yeah, this is ridiculous and scary. Now, I want to get to the last thing, and this is a little bit deep, but we often hear the phrase that people deal in absolutes. But even that simplifies, even that is a simplistic way to describe it, because absolutes have two types. And then there are spectrums, which are the opposite of absolutes. There are perfect absolutes, which are things that can never change. Statements that will always be true, no matter what. Many of these are found in the Bible, because the Bible is infallible. And, you know, if God says something, that's also a perfect absolute, because nothing can ever disprove God. And, of course, God can't go against his own word, because he can't sin, because so he can't lie. So God will never go against his own word. So I'm just going to put that out there before somebody tries to claim that God told them something that is completely against his word. Now, yeah, if it's said by God in some way, it is a perfect absolute, because nothing can ever disprove God. However, comma, if it is something that a human has said, or that, you know, many humans have said, because it is a collection of knowledge that humans have gathered, or a theory or an observation that humans have come up with based on the knowledge they've collected, or based on what's happening around them, whatever, that is an imperfect absolute. Because since it is said by humans, which humans are fallible and the world is fallible, we live in a fallen world, that means that it can change. The absolute can be disproven. Now, many of these are unlikely to be disproven. Like, for example, if I say that it is impossible for a human being to swallow an elephant, the chances of a human being actually swallowing an elephant are extremely, extremely stupid small. I didn't even do the math, because there's literally, like, it's 0.00050 billion zeros and then a one, maybe. Maybe. However, comma, because I am human and I am infallible, or I am not infallible, excuse me, I misspoke there, I am not infallible, I am fallible, that means that me making that statement of that it is impossible for a human being to swallow an elephant is an imperfect absolute, because even though it's extremely unlikely that a human being ever could, I don't possess all the knowledge there is. So there could be a possibility, however small, that, say, John unhinges his jaw and swallows an entire elephant because he has some weird genetic mutation or something. I don't know how that would ever happen, but it's just an example. It's a hypothetical. Or if I say that all organisms, rather, are made of cells. Well, that is an imperfect absolute, because there could come a time, I don't believe in aliens, and I won't till I see them, did an episode on that called Aliens, which again, you can find wherever you get your podcasts, for the most part. Anyhow, you know, the statement that all organisms are made of cells could, in theory, be disproven, because, you know, there could theoretically come a time where we discover an organism that is not made of cells, which is, again, extremely unlikely, but could happen, hypothetically, because the reason why there's a difference is God possesses all knowledge. So when he speaks, not only is he infallible, but he is speaking from a place of omnipotence. None of us is omnipotent. And so, we can make a statement based on everything we know so far, but then there is a theoretical possibility that that statement could be disproven because of something we didn't know at the time the statement was made. Versus when God speaks, he is coming from a place of having all knowledge. And so if God were to say, it is impossible for a human being to swallow an elephant, for example, then that would turn it into a perfect absolute, because he would know as an omnipotent being that there will literally never be a human capable of swallowing an elephant. But none of us can know that, because none of us can see the future. Or same with the idea that all organisms are made of cells. Like, if he were to say that is not true, that there are some out there that are not, well, then that would turn it into the statement that all organisms are made of cells, would be disproven, because, if he says that there is one out there that is not made of cells, he would be the only one to know, because he is the only omnipotent being in the universe. And then also what leftists like to do is they take it to the opposite extreme, where, they completely disregard the notion of perfect absolutes, because many of them disregard, or disbelieve rather, in God. Or even if they believe in something that resembles God, they don't follow the Bible. And so that's how you end up with people on the left claiming that men can be women. Even though the Bible clearly states that all, you know, God created them male and female. And so then what the left likes to do is they like to destroy absolutes and instead try to turn everything into a spectrum. So, for example, if I say, and this is an imperfect absolute, if I say that George has, or that everyone has 10 toes and 10 fingers, what the left will then do, I think this is why they like to over focus on edge cases so much, is because that they can use those edge cases, and try to make the edge cases dominate the conversation, to try to disprove any absolute statements. They use edge cases and spectrums. Those are their favorite things. Anyhow, if I say that George, you know, that everyone has 10 fingers and 10 toes, and then the left will say, but wait, George has 7 fingers and 3 toes. Which, if that's the case, he's in bad shape. But anyhow, they'll say that. So they actually have a formula they use. They will take an absolute statement, perfect or imperfect. They don't care, because they think all absolutes are imperfect, because they disregard the Bible. They will take an absolute statement, such as human beings have 10 fingers and 10 toes, or men cannot be women. They will take a statement like that, and they will take it, and then they will come up with an edge case, a real or hypothetical. Then they will try to use that edge case to turn the absolute into a spectrum. So an example of this in action would be, I say, human beings have 10 fingers and 10 toes, absolute. Then the leftist says, but George has 6 fingers and 7 toes, or whatever. Edge case. Then the leftist then proceeds to say, therefore, the amount of fingers and toes a human being has is a spectrum ranging from 10 to 0, which is obviously not the case. An edge case does not mean the existence of a spectrum. There are spectrums. There are some things that are a spectrum. The color wheel is a spectrum. Illness is a spectrum. You can range from, oh, I have a slight cough and a runny nose, to I'm on death's door. That's technically a spectrum. The color wheel is a spectrum, ranging from black to white. But not everything is a spectrum. There are two genders. Some people can be born with physical abnormalities, whatever. But generally speaking, gender is not a spectrum. There are two genders, male and female. The amount of fingers and toes somebody has does not range from 0 to 76. Generally you have 10 fingers and 10 toes, unless you are born with fewer, or you lose some at some point, or you might be born with more. We call that polydactyly, I believe. It's relatively rare. But the existence of those edge cases of, humans have two legs. Well, Bob got run over by a train and he lost his legs. Bob is then sad, but still an edge case, because most people do have two legs. So those are basically my thoughts, that there are two types of absolutes. So even the phrase that people deal in absolutes is too simplistic. Because there are perfect absolutes, which are defined as absolutes that can never be debunked because they are infallible, because they come from God or his word. And there are imperfect absolutes, which are any absolutes made by humans, because humans come from a place of not possessing all knowledge. Humans are not omnipotent. So any absolute statement that a human makes that did not previously come from God is automatically imperfect, because it could be debunked, even if it's unlikely to be, by later observations, later discoveries. And the left likes to take an absolute. They disregard the notion of imperfect and perfect absolutes. And they like to take an absolute and then use an edge case to try to turn that absolute into a spectrum, and turn everything into a spectrum. So that's basically what happens in a lot of our discourse, which is why they hyperfixate on edge cases so much. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. You can find us on Spotify, Audible, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, your RSS feed, iHeartRadio, and Pandora. You can also contact us on our Facebook page, Jesse's Fireside Chats, and on X at JFSCPod. You can also send us an email if you'd like at jessesfiresidechats@gmail.com. That's JESSEAS firesidechats@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Please pass this along to anybody you know that might be interested, and come back next time. Have a blessed day.